This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
His vision is not only for Ethiopia. Is most of the time he's telling us that he has got a very big vision for Eastern Africa, Horn of Africa.
That's Masarat Mangesha, an Ethiopian community leader living in Kenya, on Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed winning the Nobel Peace Prize. Details coming up. Also, a cargo plane crashed yesterday in eastern Congo, killing all 8 passengers and the crew. And a court in South Africa ruled today that the corruption trial against former President Jacob Zuma will go ahead. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
The Norwegian Nobel Committee has decided to award the Nobel Peace Prize for 2019 to Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed Ali for his efforts to achieve peace and international cooperation, and in particular for his decisive initiative to resolve the border conflict with neighboring Eritrea.
That was Berit Riis-Andersen, the chairperson of the 5-member Norwegian Nobel Committee that awards the Peace Prize, announcing today that Ethiopia's reformist leader has become the 12th winner from Africa. Abiy's decisive initiatives to end his country's conflict with Eritrea came within months of his coming to office in 2018. To discuss this momentous occasion, we have in studio Horn of Africa Service Managing Editor Tizita Balacho. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Tizita.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Tizita, after becoming Prime Minister in April 2018, Mr. Abiy introduced massive liberalizing reforms to Ethiopia, shaking up what was a tightly controlled nation. He freed thousands of opposition activists from jail, allowed exiled dissidents to return home. He even dealt with the division in the Coptic Church. Most importantly, he signed the peace deal with Eritrea. Elaborate on these points, but first I want you to talk on what this Nobel Peace Prize means to Ethiopia as well as Africa.
Thank you, Yehias. Well, it is a great day for Dr. Abiy and a great day for all Ethiopians in general. Dr. Abiy is the first Ethiopian leader to be recognized with this honorable prize. And he is among very few African leaders, you know, such as the legendary Nelson Mandela and the late de Klerk. The Peace Prize is a wonderful news for Ethiopians, as you know. This is a country known for its civil war and for shortage, not for peace or political reconciliation, to tell you the truth. So this is a very important recognition for the country. And as you say, Dr. Abiy has done so much since coming to the country, coming to power. He has allowed political prisoners to be freed. And also, most importantly, he has stopped the most outrageous torture in Ethiopian prisons. He has allowed banned political oppositions to come into the country and function as a legal opposition. And also, an important point you raised, he has brought the leaders of Ethiopian Orthodox Church together. And he has established a peace and reconciliation commission, which is working with within the country, working with opposition figures and regional leaders. So this is really important for Ethiopia and the Prime Minister.
But Tizita, these reforms also lifted the lid on Ethiopia's ethnic tensions, and the resulting violence forced millions to be displaced. That means Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's work is far from done. Do you think this award will motivate him to tackle the displacement issue as well as outstanding human rights challenges and even reverse the anti-terrorism proclamation, which, you know, continues to be used as a tool of repression?
Definitely, yes. The country is still challenged with, as you said, with ethnic strife. You know, there are displacements in the country, and international human rights organizations have pointed out that Dr. Abiy's work is far from done because there is all, you know, tension in Ethiopia. He has to bring political solutions to the division in the country. His government should work with everyone in the country to reconcile differences. There seems to be a very, very deep division in the country. And this is something that has happened for the last 27 years. And it may not be very easy to bring solution to a country that has been divided for so long. But I think the prize will encourage the prime minister. I have the honor of meeting him. This is a very humble individual. And when he says peace, he means peace and love among Ethiopians. So, you know, there are good hopes for the country.
Horn of Africa Service Managing Editor Tizita Balacho, thank you for your input.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ethiopians living in Kenya are happy for the achievement of their leader, but want him to stabilize and unite the country, Mohamed Yusuf reports.
Announcing the winner of this year's Peace Prize, Berit Reis-Anderson said the Ethiopian leader brought normalcy and people to dream a peaceful life.
In Ethiopia, even if much work remains, Abiy Ahmed has initiated important reforms that give many citizens hope for a better life and a brighter future.
Abiy, 43, came to power in April 2018 after months of mass protests aimed at the political elite of the ruling party. After taking office, Abiy brought an end to Ethiopia's hostilities with Eritrea and visited its capital, Asmara. Eritrean President Isaias Afwerki returned the favour with a trip to Addis Ababa. The Nobel Committee also recognised Abiy's effort to bring political reform to the country and mediate disputes in Sudan, South Sudan, Kenya and Somalia. Meseret Mengesha is one of the Ethiopian community leaders living in Kenya.
We are very happy as Ethiopians and also as Africans. And also I can say that this is an achievement for Ethiopia as well as the broad Africa. And I'm very happy for his achievement.
Mengesha says Abiy has a vision for the continent.
His vision is not only for Ethiopia. He's, most of the time he's telling us that he has got a very big vision for Eastern Africa, Horn of Africa, as well as the biggest Africa. And my expectation is he will do more than this.
Abiy has released political prisoners and apologized for previous government abuses. Ashenafi Dureso fled Ethiopia in 2006 and currently lives in the Kakuma refugee camp in northern Kenya. Dureso welcomes Abiy's success but wants his government to stabilize Ethiopia, where ethnic tensions have come to the surface in recent years.
I need him to bring peace and stability in the country. Now there is unstable areas. The place where I was born. Now, even some areas are under command post in Oromia region. I need him to lift that command post from people of Ethiopia. I mean, people of Oromo, especially western and southern part of Oromia region. I need him to lift those emergency states.
Dureso does not plan to go back to Ethiopia anytime soon because he feels it is not yet safe to return. Abiy's efforts have won him a lot of admirers, but political observers warn that individuals and communities unhappy with the changes are still a threat to the stability of the Horn of Africa nation. Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. a cargo plane crashed yesterday in eastern Congo while returning to the capital after providing logistics for a trip by President Felix Tshisekedi. All 8 passengers and crew were killed. The country's civil aviation authority said air traffic controllers lost contact with the Anatov aircraft 59 minutes after its takeoff from Goma. The wreckage was found in a forest in the Manima area. The dead included the president's driver, a logistics manager, and some soldiers. Tshisekedi returned to Kinshasa yesterday evening after a 4-day visit to the east of the country. The cause of the accident was not immediately known. A court in South Africa ruled today that the corruption trial against former President Jacob Zuma will go ahead despite his efforts to have the case dismissed. Zuma also faces charges of money laundering and fraud related to a government arms deal. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
More than a decade after Zuma was first taken to court over the 16 charges involving 783 payments, he is now likely to have his day in court. In May this year, Zuma applied for a permanent stay of prosecution, that is, the dismissal of the case. He argued that the case has been tainted by lengthy delays and political interference. However, Judge Bekisisa Mguni Friday delivered a judgment that is likely to be a setback for Zuma and his co-accused Thales, a French arms company.
Application for the permanent stay is dismissed with costs, such costs to include those consequent upon employment of two counsel.
Zuma was first charged in 2007 before those charges were withdrawn in 2009. The Supreme Court of Appeal ruled against the withdrawal in 2017 and the charges were reinstated in 2018. Zuma supporters are not in agreement with the judgment. Nkosenja Shezi, a Zuma supporter, says he believes this is clear persecution for the former president's unwavering support for black economic empowerment.
We are very disappointed but not surprised at all. We knew this is what was coming. And in fact, this judgment also tells us the much work that needs to be done for us to get into our total emancipation and defend those who fight for true radical economic transformation.
Prior to Friday's judgment, October 15 was set as a holding date for the commencement of the trial. However, legal expert Byron Jackson says it will not be as easy as it looks.
I'm confident that the former president as well as Thales will want to approach the Supreme Court of Appeal to appeal the finding of the court today.
Zuma has 15 days to appeal Friday's ruling. His first appeal would go to the High Court. If the court rules in his favor, a date for that application will be set, and that will automatically suspend the start of the trial. In case the High Court dismisses his appeal application, Zuma has 30 days to challenge the decision by going directly to the Supreme Court of Appeal. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
October 15th, Mozambicans go to the polls to elect a new president. On the surface, it looks like a simple two-way contest between the long-ruling Frelimo party and the opposition Renamo party. But in Mozambique, nothing is as simple as it looks. I talked to our reporter, Amancio Miguel, who was in Mozambique's capital Maputo a few days ago to bring us an update on the election. Now he has traveled to the city of Beira, a region heavily hit by Cyclone Idai last March. In talking to Amancio, he says the government promised help to the cyclone victims, but that help never materialized.
People are frustrated because they say many people, particularly poor people, which make at least 50% of the population of Mozambique and Beira, with around the Sofala province, around 1 million people, they say all of these promises, they were never delivered, and this leads to frustration, and they become more angry when they see the very same politician who came to make promise coming back after 6 months, but now with a different message, a message of the campaign asking for them to vote for them so that they can have better life. So people say they're not willing to follow that path again.
Do they have any other choice apart from Frelimo Party and the Renamo Party in Beira?
Actually, the city of Beira is run by the third major party in the country, which is Democratic Movement, MDM, which is won the last local elections. David Simango is the mayor of this city, and he is actually running for the position of provincial governor, along with Mr. Lawrence Gulia for Frelimo Party, and also Noe Marindiki running for Renamo Party. So in this city, Frelimo and Renamo, they are fighting to take out MDM in the position of provincial governor, because this is the first time that Mozambique is having elections for provincial governors, and it seems like Mr. David Simango is in a better position, according to experts, because he is now the mayor of Beira, so he's likely to have many people following him, and he might probably become the governor of Sofala province, and that would all give room for another election, local elections, to replace him, but only if he wins.
You are in Beira right now, but in Maputo, Amancio, there was an attempt yesterday to kill an opposition candidate. Could you brief us on that a little bit?
Actually, there was an attempt in the region of Manyisa, which is like 75 kilometers from the Maputo city center. So this was an attempt against Augusto Pelembe, who is running for the position of provincial governor for the Party Democratic Movement, the same as the one that Beira is leading at the moment. And it's believed that this is the very same group that killed on Monday another a leading human rights activist in Mozambique, a national observer, Mr. Anastasio Matavel, who was killed in Gaza province, and the police admitted that he was killed by four members of the corporation, and again they promised to go on and investigate. Today I spoke to MDM, Democratic Movement spokesperson, who say he basically doesn't believe that the police will investigate, since now they're quite sure that among the police, Mozambican police, there's like death squad. They go on kill opposition, members of the opposition, and also human rights activists, in a way to crack down those who have different opinion and also maintain Frelimo in power.
Tomorrow, Amancio, is the last day of the campaign. So give us a general look at the mood of the country. What's going on?
It's going to be very, very tough for opposition parties to run this last day of the campaign, because they say they are fearful since there have been all this killing, and also some members of opposition that have been jailed for no reason, according to what they say. And they accuse Frelimo of this. The mood is, there's a lot of tension. Even observers, they're kind of like fearful. They feel intimidated. But I have seen at least the three parties in this region where I am, they're now preparing for tomorrow. And it seems like all three major parties, they're willing to close their campaigns in Beira, because this is, no one has the stronghold of the opposition. As a matter of fact, today I spoke to one taxi driver who said, we don't care whether they give us T-shirts, whether they give us caps, all this political merchandise. We just want those who say the truth.
That was VOA's Amancio Miguel in the city of Beira in Mozambique, talking to me about the country's upcoming election. Sudanese citizens are embracing the Sudanese Sovereign Council's decision to appoint Naimat Abdullah as the country's first female chief justice, a first in the Arab world. A women's rights activist in Sudan says she hopes the new chief justice will ratify international laws that protect women's rights in the country. Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Naimat Abdullah Muhammad Khair's appointment as a chief justice is monumental not only for Sudan, but for all of Africa. She is only the fifth female name in Africa after Ghana, Ethiopia, Seychelles, and Lesotho. Wafa Adam, who works for local NGO SIHA, which advocates for women's rights in Sudan, is elated that A woman now holds a top position in the country, something that was not possible for decades.
I'm very excited about that. She's going to support the women, and she is going to advocate for the women and laws. And we expected that to support the women movement and the women fight.
Adam says Sudan is one of the three Muslim countries in the world that has not ratified the Convention on the Elimination of the Forms of Discrimination Against Women, known as CEDAW. She says she expects Abdullah to ratify CEDAW so that Sudanese communities can end violence against women. Adam says she also expects Abdullah to work to reform other Sudanese local laws that oppress women.
For example, public order laws and family laws and criminal laws and like many laws that is not supporting the women's rights. We're requesting her, or we need her support for advocating for reforming those laws.
Isra Daoud, a Sudanese youth who has been active during the recent protests that led to the ouster of longtime President Omar al-Bashir, says Abdullah's appointment is a huge development in Sudan's history.
This is a huge milestone for Sudan, and now we are depending on judiciary so much so that atrocities committed during the revolution's period will be brought to book. Abdullah has played a significant role during the revolution, and everybody has pushed for her appointment.
Haj Hamad, a political science lecturer at Khartoum University, says the Abdullah's appointment as a chief justice proves that the overwhelming number of Sudanese trust women's leadership skills.
This is a major breakthrough from earlier policies of different regimes in the country, that providing preferential status for women professionals and leaders to occupy such kind of very, very high-ranking and influential posts.
Hamad says Abdullah will likely face many obstacles over the next 3 years of Sudan's transitional government. But he says the Chief Justice should stand firm to defend the Sudanese constitutional declaration and all laws that govern the country. According to the constitutional document signed on August 17th, the Chief Justice shall name the Judiciary Council. In addition, the Chief Justice heads the judiciary and serves as the President of the National Supreme Court. Abdullah is expected to be sworn in sometime next week. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Vasco Volarich, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.